and welcome to Play Riot, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
I think we both got next or current gen consoles this week. Is that right?
Did you? Can we call them next gen for another week? I love the idea that we're both living in the future, even if it's just for a few days.
Do we not call the gen until Nintendo arrives as well?
Yeah, I was listening to the Giant Bombcast this week, and they were talking about how in the background, the Xbox is making reference to Gen 9. Mm-hmm. And I haven't looked at the Wikipedia entry to see how all the generations break down, but nice to kind of think about. Here we are, so many generations in. My journey started. Where did your journey start? My journey started with Super Nintendo.
Mine started with the PlayStation, although I had a Game Boy Pocket before that. That was my first ever video game system.
So, oh, that's so interesting. You started with all those floaty vertices all over the place. It's kind of amazing, right? The way that, in the same way that I think if you were born in a certain era, say the late 20s or early 30s, you kind of watched movies transform over your lifetime in terms of the technology and stuff that they used. Mm-hmm. And we'll say that maybe you lived until the 1990s or something. And I know movies have continued to move up, but consoles and video games feel so intrinsically connected to the massive like moments and graphical technology that have been along the way. And I feel like this is our first time with a generation leap or whatever, where the graphics conversation is, you know, it's going to continue to progress, but it's going to be a lot more like going from, you know, Toy Story 2 to Toy Story 3. Yes, there's market improvements and Toy Story 3 is a much better looking film start to finish, but you don't really appreciate it in the moment necessarily.
I think ray tracing is a big thing that, you know, people are going to really hitch their wagons on for a while. Like, that's going to be kind of the definitive look of this generation, I think, something that couldn't have been done before.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool.
It's like, do you remember when the 360 generation came out and like everything could start to look kind of like shiny and wet? That's the
bump
ray tracing
everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Suddenly texture was present.
Yeah, we got a years and years full of games where everything was constantly raining because it was it would make everything shiny.
Right.
I just remember the Call of Duty 2, and there was a game called Time Frame. That's going to bug me now. I don't remember what it's called. Let me look that up. But you would recognize the cover if I showed it to you. It was Time Shift. That's the one. First person shooter with some kind of time manipulation elements, kind of like Braid is a first person shooter in a way. But that was a very Quake 4 looking game. That was just like the textures were like plastic wrap, so like stretched over every single object in the environment.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. I know the exact look you're talking about. With ray tracing and reflections, we're really just countdown to, and I assume that Remedy will be the first to arrive at this, but I'm thinking a third person or first person shooter game is going to have a John Wick style hall of mirrors and lights set piece that we will be in for at some point in this generation. So I'm calling it now. I'm just curious who's going to get there first.
It could be cool. Well, as far as next-gen experiences goes, I've spent a little time running around Demon's Souls, and, you know, it's kind of what you would expect it to be. It's very pretty, but it's very, it's a Souls game.
Yeah.
It feels like a nice step up, but it's definitely just kind of an incremental step. And so I decided to throw on Astro's Playroom as well, which is absolutely delightful, and it does things that I didn't even know that I wanted video game consoles to do. We've heard the talk about it, how it shows off the controller, but it's so clever in how it does that. And, it's really peppered with a bunch of really dorky video game jokes. People that play as much video games as I do would be like, oh, I, yeah, I, I see what you're doing here. I mean, not that they're especially subtle, like they're, you know, they're pretty in your face about it, but it's very gratifying to just turn a corner and see like a, like the silliest little joke. And even the writing in the game is really funny as well. Like, there's a line that's kind of taking the piss out of the PlayStation 3 using the Spider-Man font. And just like, it's very self-aware, very kind of reverential to Sony history. And it's a lot of fun. And the controller stuff that it does is just absolutely wild. I love the adaptive triggers. I love the kind of advanced rumble in the controller. It kind of like, the controller feels next gen in the way that nothing else really has yet.
So I should bite my tongue and wait to see if I'm in for a DualSense pitch this week.
Not this week. I've got something else on my mind this time around, but surely in the future when I get some chance to really kind of experiment and see what the controller can do.
Heck yeah. Cool. I'm excited. I'm very excited to announce that I booted up Splinter Cell, the original, on my... Well, you're playing the absolute latest cutting edge. I'm playing something from, like, the 90s. But, boy, oh, boy, Sam looks very, very crispy, and that the auto HDR stuff is... It's all pretty neat.
Nice.
But, yeah, I agree with you. I think you made this observation before. I forget if it was on the show or not, but... Xbox is still, it's waiting for its game. It's definitely waiting for its game. I feel like I've got a new toy, but nothing to show for it necessarily, other than incredibly well running games and very fast loads.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants me to direct a Banjo-Kazooie game, you know where to find me.
Oh my God, please.
Anyways, let's get to some video game pitches today. I'll be going first. And, what I wanted to bring into the mix here is another game I think we've both been playing is Fuser. You've been playing that as well, right?
Yeah, I think I'm bad at it, but which I texted you, but keep going. We'll talk more.
Going into it, I was certain that I was going to love the musical technology, the kind of freewheeling music mixing like you would get in Drop Mix, and some of that kind of creative energy that was brought into the Fantasia game before that even. And so far I'm getting what I expected it to be. But one thing that I wasn't really sold on beforehand was the actual gameplay. You know, it felt a little nebulous in the preview footage that I've seen. And as I'm actually sitting down with the game, I'm kind of coming to that same conclusion. Like, I understand that there are scoring mechanics, but they feel a little bit
arbitrary.
They feel a little bit difficult to pin down.
Yes.
Like, there are requests from the crowd. I guess we should provide a little bit of context. Fuser is a game by Harmonix, the studio behind Rock Band and Dance Central and Fantasia Music Evolved, behind Drop Mix as well, most relevantly. But they've come in with what is essentially an all-digital version of Drop Mix in a way, but without the kind of card game element. It's a game where you play as kind of a festival DJ, playing in front of a large crowd, and you are able to kind of load up a crate of records, essentially, at the beginning of each set. And it's your prerogative to create interesting mixes by dropping individual instruments from each song, and there are licensed songs that you're familiar with from the radio, into a mix that and the game itself has the technology to kind of like auto key and BPM adjust so that it all sounds great together for the most part. You know, you can make some pretty garish sounding mixes, but if you really kind of like know what you're doing and are willing to kind of experiment a little bit, then like you pretty regularly come away with stuff that sounds like pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah. Fuser taught me that, oh my God, what's the song? Warren G's Regulate goes well with almost everything.
You get to feel like you get to live out the Neil Cicierga specific power fantasy, which is not a power fantasy. It is often fulfilled by video games.
No.
So, it's really cool in what it does with the music. And I love just kind of like just hearing the music, but, there are scoring mechanics in there, and it does rate you on a 1 to 5 star scale at the end of the mix. You're scored primarily, it seems, by how well you drop the new tunes into the mix, like alongside the actual beat of the music. So every downbeat, you can drop it in for an extra kind of bonus point, or every, well, it's kind of like pickups that are specific to each track. Those will also serve as kind of like entry points in a way. And if you drop it just kind of randomly without thinking, haphazardly, then you don't get those bonus points. But there are some also, there are also like crowd requests. They'll request specific songs or instruments or eras, and you have to look through your rack of music and get something that will satisfy those requests. There are, you can mute individual instruments. You can solo individual instruments, and just whatever it takes to kind of get the mix feeling kind of fresh and fun. But at the end of it, you go a certain amount of time and then the set ends. And I never really feel prepared for the set to end whenever it does.
Yeah.
It just seems like it kind of comes out of nowhere. I don't yet understand what sets a 5-star set list apart from a 3-star set list. So I'm a little fuzzy on the actual scoring mechanics. And what I wanted to kind of challenge us with was, if we were to design mechanics around the core technology of Fuser, how would we make it potentially more interesting? Not to say that it's not, because I haven't played enough to really come to terms with everything that it has in store yet, but just kind of based on initial impressions, like what would we as, Monday morning quarterbacks do to adjust the way that Fuser plays? I'm going to start the clock there.
Wow. Boy, oh boy. I'm glad I bought the game so I can talk about this. I think you're right about the sets feeling kind of random and how they end. And I think to that end, one thing that I'd like to see is, I don't know if it needs more of like a linear timeline presentation or something, but there's a lot of, I feel trapped between two worlds in the game. One is that very structured, the set ends, and like we said, kind of unclearly. And then there's this other like free play, which is like, at some point you just kind of get tired and quit. I'm looking for something that's almost, I don't know if it's almost like a race, right? It's like lap based or something. And at that you get like 10 minutes or 5 minutes, some amount of time. Instead, you're trying to like hit a timeline of themes or something, or you're trying to control or match the energy graph of the audience, yeah, where like they want to, you want to build them up and then you want to like sustain it for a while. And then you want to, you know, like any good DJ, and they actually kind of allude to this stuff in the game. You have moments where you like drop out every track except for the vocals and that sort of thing. And I wonder if there was actual time structure and a way to see further forward about that, that would make it feel a little bit more in control.
The career mode is kind of structured around individual DJs, each that have their own kind of personality and style, that kind of are trying to build you up to be your own DJ and to, you know, kind of have your own musical styling in a way. So they kind of go through strategies that they have, and they do kind of touch on some of that, you know, they want to start out small and kind of build their way up. And sometimes they encourage you to drop out individual instruments so that you're kind of soloing to kind of, you know, adjust the energy like that. But I feel like if the game is scoring for that, it doesn't do a good enough job of communicating that. Maybe if there were like even really simple adjustments, like an on-screen, score numbers that pop out so you can see when what you're doing is good versus like isn't getting you anywhere. Because right now there is a kind of a meter off to the side that's like a gradient that fills up between like the audience hating your set and the audience liking your set.
Should I be watching that thing? Because I feel like I don't
know.
Okay. Okay.
I see it go up whenever I do something, you know, whenever I drop a...
Something on the beat.
Whenever I drop an instrument on the beat, but...
Or like fulfill a request, I see it go up then too.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just not really... Yeah, I'm not really clear what causes it to rise and fall. there's a few other games that Harmonix has made that do have a little bit more kind of freestyle energy to them, and they have more kind of boundaries around them, which I feel is kind of helpful in a way. And maybe we can kind of look to these examples. Rock Band 4 features freestyle guitar solos, but when you are in a solo, you can play whatever you want, but the solos are kind of broken out into sections that kind of emulate what the actual guitar solo is doing. So there will be kind of like fret tapping. There will be sustain notes. There will be ones where you try to hit them at like, you know, quickly or slow strumming to kind of guide you gently into creating a interesting and well-considered guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's like, if you kind of fulfill that request of playing in that specific style for that portion of the solo, then the solo percentage goes up. It's the equivalent of hitting the percentage notes that it tracks on a regular, you know, Rock Band track. But, you know, you are given that little bit of guidance there. You are given something that you can either hit or you can fail to hit. And you know when you succeed and you know when you fail, which I think is helpful. There's also Rock Band VR is a little bit more freestyle as well. Instead of playing notes on a track, although there is a notes on a track mode in the game, you're primarily playing essentially kind of like a rhythm guitar section. You're playing chords that are kind of mixed into the song as if you're playing kind of like a backup guitar piece. But you are scored by measure or by every four measures or something. You're supposed to kind of like chain together combinations of chords. So yeah, maybe, you know, combinations in that way.
Oh, you know what? You really just kind of, I think you unlocked something for me. Imagine if the campaign was, all right, the campaign is, okay, you're going to go do a set at this venue. It's going to be these three songs. You know, so there's actually like actual songs with beginning, you know, beginning, middles and ends. And maybe the in between transitions are smoothed out in the way that a DJ would smooth them out. But really, there is something in the back, and you are taking your deck worth of music and the music tracks that you have access to, and you are layering on top of the already structured music. So that way, like, you actually get like a, hey, you did the, in the same way that like Rock Band is like, you're going to play this set with these songs, you get some of that in the campaign. And it's like, oh, nobody saw you showing up with, you know, Jolene by Dolly Parton and throwing that over Ironic by Alanis Morissette. You know, the audience has like an expectations of the songs, and then you actually have your own unique layer of performance on top of it. And then that way, like, freestyle can be truly freestyle, but at least this way you almost get a rating per song. Like, because if you have a song underneath it, you can now know that, like, for example, Into Club by 50 Cent is a minor key song with a certain tempo and stuff. So when you see the songs that are going to be in the set list, you can kind of select your deck to complement it. But I find myself doing something that I know I shouldn't do, or not shouldn't do, but is unoptimal to do, which is I don't know what songs the whole vibe of the show is going to be. So I just use autofill for the rest of my set when I go into those campaigns. And maybe that's killing me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting if they do kind of lock you into one track. You know, the vocal track maybe is kind of like nailed onto the deck. Yeah. And you couldn't change that. You could mute it. You could solo it. You can even potentially kind of apply effects to it. But yeah, it would be kind of neat if you do have that control. I also want more DJ type of controls, and maybe this does come later on in the in the game, but I have a DJ turntable deck, and you know, there are lots of kind of effects on there. Like you can do kind of like
phasers, dropouts, yeah, skips, yeah,
repeats and skips and stuff like that, where you rewinds. Can kind of hit the same like nut note, you
yeah.
know, and
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of build up tension that way. And I don't think I can do that yet in Fuser, and I don't know if that's still coming up. Another small kind of complaint I have is that I've unlocked three of the custom instruments so far, instruments that you can kind of like that you can kind of play. And it'll kind of automatically, you know, kind of fuse it to the beat, and you can create something that's custom. You don't have to rely upon the predetermined samples, but it all feels very, so it's all kind of on a square grid of buttons, kind of like you would see like the DJs with their, I don't even know what they're called, the drum pads or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of button grids.
Yeah. I think a drum machine,
which I think it works, but, like for one, it keeps the song and presumably also the scoring running in the background. So you're not encouraged to spend a lot of time experimenting in there. You kind of have to know what you want, get in and get out to get back to the rest of the track, which I don't love. But another thing is that like comparing it against a similar effort in Fantasia Music Vault, where it did have kind of custom instruments that you could play, but they were all like abstract shapes that you would control in weird and kind of counterintuitive sometimes ways with your arms, just based on weird shapes and waveforms and stuff. You would stretch and squish and put your arms in certain directions to repeat samples in a vocal track, like some really creative and cool stuff. But the abstractness of it there kind of encouraged experimentation, whereas I feel like the grid based button pattern here makes it feel like, I don't know, I'm not throwing my cursor around as wildly as I would be if it was just kind of like an ill-defined circular shape, you know? And I feel like I benefited a lot from having that freedom of experimentation before. So maybe it's something that I have to personally get over, but, I'm not quite feeling the new kind of play your own instrument section as much as I had been previously.
I'm going to ask, like, you're playing this on PC. Yeah.
Yeah.
I imagine I'm having a wildly different experience from you playing it on the Xbox.
Could be, yeah.
Because I do not have the fidelity of mouse movement. You know, I've got a joystick that is kind of like, it almost acts as though it's the Destiny cursor.
I was just going to say that, yeah.
So, I think, you know, what we're talking about in some of these things is like, and what's maybe a little bit strange about Fuser is Harmonix has the answer to some of these questions, right, in past games that they've made. Whether it's the structured set lists of your Rock Bands of the world or some of the cool DJification in DJ Hero, stuff like that. Although it was DJ Hero Harmonix.
That was a different, that was Neversoft.
The Guitar Hero folks. So I think they do, there is a history anyway of these music and rhythm games that have some of these answers. And I'm really curious, I guess I would say, to someone, and I know this is kind of a little bit off of pitch land for a second, but it's like, Fuser is great, but I'm not sure if it's good.
Mm, yeah.
So
anyways, we are well out of time on that one. We spent more than we are allotted typically. So let's, I was just thinking, you know, if this is just going to be kind of like a Fuser revision, we can just call this Refuser.
Refuser. I love it. And I do think, to what you just said, Fuser feels like it is a game mode away from it being, it really finding its groove, pun intended.
All right, let's move on to your pitch. What are you bringing us today?
So, we love comedy games on the show, but one comedy game that we refer to often is Octodad Dadliest Catch.
Mm.
I, over the past week, for whatever reason, I think this may have started with last week tonight's John Oliver having a big section about how fun octopuses are and facts about octopi or whatever the plural of octopus is. It got me thinking, would it be kind of interesting / fun to have something akin to underwater stealth game where you're almost taking that kind of man-eater-esque vibe, but you are playing as an octopus, and you have all the kind of octopus powers at your disposal. So octopus can eject ink from themselves to sort of thwart enemies, but their ink can also incapacitate enemies because it contains a poison. They can poison themselves with their own ink, so they have to be very careful, which feels very risk-rewardy video game to me. There's also mechanics where you can kind of sit still on a surface and maybe camouflage into it. So there's potentially a stealth game in there. And yeah, I just, all things octopus, I love the idea of either having structured levels or an open-ish world where you're doing missions and surviving with all of your octopus skills.
All right, let's go and start the clock. One of the most impressive stories that I've heard about octopus, and I don't know if it's actually true, but...
Octolore.
Yes, indeed. We could be spreading some fake octofacts, which I don't mean to do, but that there were octopus that were kept in a kind of containment cell, not a cell, but a tank, I guess it would be, in a science lab, secured with the padlock, and the scientists would kind of leave the room every night to go home and be with their families, and then would come back in the morning to find fish from other tanks missing, and they couldn't figure out what it was that was causing these fish, because where are fish going to go, you know? And they found, they left a security camera running one night and found that the octopus was able to kind of liquefy its arm, get itself out of the tank, unlock the padlock by observing what the humans did when they were using the padlock, you know, during the day, and was
able
to kind of go around the lab, eat its fill, and then hop back in the tank and lock itself up again.
Jessica pointed this out to me. She was like, how about that octopus that was escaping from that lab and doing all sorts of mischief? So maybe there's a, kind of cool, like squishing yourself in and through obstacles. But yeah, octopus do know how to figure out. I think like the player embodying the octopus, we might not be far off in intelligence levels.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like when you think about games like Maneater, it's a fun fantasy because, you know, you get to empower the, or you get to embody the power of a shark, but you are a shark that is, you know, human levels of intelligent, I guess, depending on who's playing.
Which is actually my nightmare. That's literally my nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, it's not like a completely naturalistic, because I mean, it doesn't strive to be, it's very arcadey game, but in a game where you are playing as an octopus, at least the intelligence level is a little bit more appropriate. So you are kind of operating with the faculties that like a real octopus might have.
Yeah. And I forget if this was part of it, but octopus mostly stay separate. But if they get like ecstasy or something, they will actually hang out with each other like an octopus on hallucinogens, which made me think, well, if this is an open world game, what a perfect format and vessel for Ubisoft to do its classic hallucination side stories. And you could actually even do partying with other octopus as your little hallucination quests. But yeah, the idea of... You know, I love the game Subnautica, and that game very much has a lot of feeling of going into, at least in the initial area that you land, there's a lot of squeezing into these coral spaces. And I imagine between having to eat and survive, having to not being the largest thing in the ocean, right? Being able to potentially be at risk from other fish. All of this stuff kind of adds up to what I think would be a compelling stealth experience, especially, you know, having sequences that almost feel like horror when really dark water and, you know, you're kind of gliding along the ocean floor or something, and you don't know if that's a shark or if it's a whale and it's not going to harm you, that sort of stuff.
We've seen kind of a similar creature recently in Carrion, how it's able to kind of squish through environments and move freely, both kind of on land and in the water. I would think like that would make a pretty compelling model to kind of base this character on.
Yeah, totally. So what else? I mean, like, in terms of motion and movement, I know Octodad kind of goes for a two-arm approach, but since like Octopus can technically smell and they have nerve endings in their arms, I wonder if there's mechanics where you can switch between legs for different sorts of sensors and sensory experiences.
Do you know if octopi use their arms in different ways, or are they more or less interchangeable?
I don't know. I think much all of them are, but we could cheat it probably, right?
Oh, sure. It's kind of like a RPG game, how you can only wear so many rings because you only have presumably so many ringable fingers. But, you know, octopi, you can kind of equip up to 8 different items.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like the idea of if you go kind of man-eater style, the ability to, as you eat or consume or maybe grow from tiny little baby octopus to, you know, large Kraken-esque octopus, having some sizing in there, or as you get larger, you can go deeper in the ocean and see ever more sort of wild creatures.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of like really scary stuff like deep underwater, and
it'd be cool
to be able to explore it. And, you know, you think about the giant squids that are, you know, deep, deep underwater. And I can see this being kind of a game of scale as well. So as you're kind of a smaller octopus trying to make your way in the tide pools and stuff, you know, the threats are appropriately scaled there versus when you become kind of giant Kraken level in a way than you are in those more threatening, deep, you know, dark caves and, you know, exploring things in there, kind of like a Subnautica in a way.
Yeah, I like the idea of having those levels of depth and using the fear of the ocean. And you could even potentially have mechanics. There was that game that was like all about playing as a blind protagonist. So I imagine maybe even the vision could be something akin to, you know, where you stick and stretch your arms, and you can really kind of stretch out. And as you stretch out, it's almost like vision cones and stuff all around you.
Ah, sensory vision cones, but using different senses. So you have your smell, and I don't know if octopi can hear, presumably. I guess so. I never really thought about whether they have ears or not. But maybe the different senses, and another thing like squids, I don't want to use them interchangeably because I know they're different creatures, but for this purpose, whatever. Squids can communicate by like rapidly changing color as a way of kind of expressing their own version at language. So, you know, presumably there's ways that you can kind of tap into like an infrared understanding of the world, or,
yeah,
I don't know, get more out of the colors, get hints as to where predators might be hiding or whether allies are trying to signal you somewhere. I think there's some cool kind of bioluminescent or just kind of I don't want to say extrasensory, but senses that humans don't have. Find cool ways to represent those with modern computer technology.
Yeah, and I think it can, if you like get the tone of the moments right, you can, you know, elicit everything from the beauty and serene Abzu all the way to, you know, that dreading fear of Subnautica when you're seeing these huge fish go by you, and all the way to like, you know, what a that horror game, where you're in a mental hospital and you jump in lockers and stuff and bad guys pass you by.
Outlast.
There you go. So I think you could like, just using the setting of the ocean, create a real sort of emotional tone palette, but also have some cool sense mechanics in there.
All right. I think that will just about do it on that one. Let's close it up. Let's give it a name. So a lot of Kraken puns we can make, like cracking up, all that it's cracking up to be.
Is there an ink pun to be had? Like instead of incorporated, is there like an octo ink or something? Ocean ink. Oh, they do have eyes. Oh, they're gross.
There was Octomom a while back, right? That was a...
Octomom? Yes,
there's already Octodad. That well is pretty dry.
Octopoda is the order of octopods.
That's pretty cool, actually.
that's pretty good. And you can play as any one of the subclasses or of octopus.
This could be a multiplayer thing.
Yeah.
All right. Octopoda sounds like a nice enough place to land on this one.
I'm going to send you the spelling just in case.
That's a good choice. We have our community request today sent in to us from Samuel Windsor. Thank you very much for what appears to be a very carefully constructed video game pitch. Samuel Windsor has to say, mid-season sale, trousers from just £25. There is a picture that features what looks to be trousers as you would expect them to be, hanging off of a chair, but instead of legs, the trousers appear to be like waist side out, and so it looks like it's just like a tube of two tops of trousers that don't actually lead to legs of any kind, like you would put on a cat dog or something like that.
If you're confused at this visual, I will try to include it on the post of the website. But it is two pairs of folded jeans, really, on a chair. But they do look like jean tubes, don't they?
So that's not a lot of information to go on, but let's see what kind of trouser-based video game we can come up with. We're going to start the clock there. You know what could be fun is to do one of those kind of stand-up arcade games like you would get in the arcades back in the day, like those skiing games, the skateboarding games that you would actually kind of balance on something. Maybe you have something that is
where you have
kind
to put on pants?
Almost. Like, yeah, it's kind of like, but they're kind of like, you know, assless chaps in a way. They're kind of like, you know, empty in the back so you can kind of step into them. They're kind of like rigid and you kind of have to struggle to get them to move, but you have to perform like a series of on-screen actions with this kind of difficult to wrangle giant pair of pants that you are getting into.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. I do love the idea of having to just like, as long as the station has a Febreze or a disinfecting spray to it, then maybe I'll consider
it. You wouldn't actually be taking off your pants to play this.
No, but oh my gosh. What if you had like a weird in the same arcade cabinet, you do an experience that's almost like AR or something, and you have a camera pointed at the person and you can very quickly, let's say we've got, you know, some good scanner on there and we can tell where the person's legs are. And then you have to like, I don't know, play tailor for yourself or something where you have to kind of like measure your legs and like cut out a pants pattern and stuff that's going to match. And you're looking to like design and try on different pairs of pants. I'm trying to figure out how that would be scored, but maybe I don't have to.
You know, what'd be neat is to do a game where it scans you in an AR kind of way. It has a camera on you the entire time, but your character on screen is kind of bisected at the waist. So you are using your real body kind of like a Kinect to control your, you know, yourself on screen as you kind of navigate through obstacles and stuff like that. But the top half of your body and the bottom half of your body are, you know, floating separately. So you have to kind of split your attention between the two. Maybe there's even times when the halves of your body switch places. So you have to walk with your arms, hit switches and stuff with your feet. You aren't actually upside down in real life, but you would have to, you know, use your skills to, you know, your kind of 3D rotation skills to determine how to move your character around based on where your body parts are at the time. And then maybe kind of as the game goes on, body parts would kind of break apart further. So you might have an arm on one side of the screen and a leg on the other, and you have to move them all with your real life appendages.
I was actually just, as you were saying that, I was imagining some mechanic in there where where you're playing a character that's wearing really oversized trousers and you need to always kind of be pulling them up with one hand or another. So there's like a dedicated left hand and right hand, like hike up your trousers sort of mechanic. So you're on like an endless runner or a platforming challenge, but you just have these oversized pants that if you let them fall down too much, you'll just start tripping and you need to as you're going on your journey that you mentioned, I'm kind of manipulating and pulling up my pants constantly.
It's kind of fun, like especially if you have like a hula hoop around your actual waist that you would have to kind of keep elevated. But I don't know what would, maybe that kind of hoop could be on a track so that as your character, as things interfere with your pants in the game world, it would pull the hoop downward. So you'd have to kind of like really, you know, keep up with it. But like, it doesn't feel like it would be difficult to just like hold it up around your neck and have it never catch on anything, like have it never be stepped on. Like, it feels easy to avoid the types of situations that would make the game interesting in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm going to go back and look at the email for a second. I want to see if there's additional details. So Samuel Windsor, that's potentially the name of our character, which is great. Okay. As long as I know we're still diverging on some of this stuff, but I do also like the idea of having something, it would almost be WarioWare style or something in my mind, where you are designing pairs of trousers for all sorts of different things with legs. So I'm looking at this chair here. What would chair pants look like?
There's a, you know, those kind of memes that go around that are like, you know, what would so-and-so animal look like if it was wearing a hat? How would it wear it?
Yeah, yes.
So it might be kind of fun to, you know, cut out pants in real time and see how they fit the creatures. I don't really know. Like, I feel like that would be a fun
moment, but not necessarily
like a little flash thing to embed in like a chain email.
Yeah.
I don't know. How would it make like a whole game out of it?
Yeah, that's true. Sorry. Well, let's go back to where you were on an adventure sort of thing. Where were we headed there?
I feel like we've been on a lot of adventures.
Yeah, I know. But you were talking before I got off on the hold your pants up stuff. I've
about
lost
like
my
a character that's kind of like you play Kinect style with your real body and then it splits apart the character on screen.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's cool. And then you're kind of maneuvering around with your body to do that.
So you got monkey bars on one side. You've got lava. You have to kind of hop across on another and you have to split your attention, make sure that you are appropriately reacting to either one.
You know, it almost like in terms of a locomotion for something like this, do you remember Glover for Nintendo 64?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever played it, but I remember it existing.
Well, you've probably seen the visual of he's a glove character and the way he walks is with his middle and ring finger on a like beach ball sort of thing.
Mm.
And the visual in my mind is you're playing a game as a pair of trousers that's kind of moving around on one of these beach balls or something like that. And you're looking to maybe assemble other parts of an outfit in each level. Like, I do like the idea of a charming platformer where you're just a pair of pants.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're collecting like patches and stuff as you take damage, you actually have to find little scraps of material and sew up your, go into the menu and actually like stitch up your holes that you get.
That's clever. I like, it's almost like the Metal Gear Solid 3 where you'd have to treat your specific wounds in the menus instead of just taking like a health potion.
That's right. And then, you know, eventually it, you know, it has that, that question, that timeless question of like, is this the same pair of pants if it's lost every part of itself and been remade 100 times over?
I wonder if there's a way to kind of mechanically like, if you can't control it as well because it's not you any longer, or I feel like that would make it less fun as you took more damage.
Yeah, I think one thing that you might want to do is like if you were a pair of trousers and kind of a 3D platformer, you could almost, in the way that a Mario game lets you have suits and power-ups of that sort, I wonder if you could change the material of your pants and then therefore get different properties. Like if you get like swooshy pants, if you can glide past enemies, but you also get that great swooshy pants sound, the tracksuit sort of sound, or sweatpants like give you extra stamina or endurance or speed or something.
And that's kind of a fun, like having just played Astro's Playroom, the amount of texture that you can communicate through the DualSense controller, like you could do such interesting swishes with that thing that really communicate the types of pants that you are embodying at the moment.
You could fully simulate the feeling of wearing corduroy pants.
Indeed. Let's go ahead and wrap that one there and let's give it a name. I think the best name is already taken, which is It's Mr. Pants, a series by Rare.
It's Mr. Pants is so good, though. Oh, I feel like it's almost back in the like 1980 sounding thing to say something like Trouser Trouble or something like that.
I feel like there's some good kind of humor we can get from that. Like in a ukulele, there was a snake named Trouser who is literally a trouser snake.
Yeah.
Some good British humor we can get out of that.
Snaky trousers or something like that?
Like Zippy the something. Like Zippy the jean pant or something.
Zippy the jean. You would also say like your fly's unzipped. I wonder if it's just like Zip Fly. Zip Fly Adventure or something.
Zippy's Fly Adventures.
Zippy's Fly Adventures. That's pretty good. If you want to, maybe this is a sequel title, but I'll just say Zippy's Fly Adventures, a pants off, dance off.
That sounds good. That's a funny one. That one really tickles me.
I actually kind of want to play the pants game. I'm not going to lie.
That sounds like fun. Anyways, thank you very much, Samuel Windsor, for sending that one in. You have a 30-day no quibble return guarantee, which I appreciate. Anyways, if you would like to submit a video game pitch of your own or sign us up to an unrelated newsletter for us to make video game pitches out of, you can do so by going to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us playwrightcast@gmail.com or you can tweet us @playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodoom for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And while you're listening to all those great Protodoom tracks, you're going to switch over and you're going to listen to The Sausage Factory. And then you're going to listen to Sound of Play. And then you're going to listen to Kane and Rince. And you're going to be steeped in your deep, deep, rich trouser lore of the Kane and Rince network.
All right. And to take us out of the show today, we have a redacted game. I have one for you today. Let's see if you can guess this particular game. A Wicked Plot by a Sinister Redacted and his massive redacted of monstrous redacteds has cast Redacted into darkness. Only Redacted and his friends from the redacted world can bring the dawn again to the lands of the redacted elders. Get ready to discover a wild and unpredictable world where you'll use the surprising power of the giant redacted and the creatures they redacted to make your way through redacted realms and challenging missions. You'll be surprised by what you can do with these redacted, but it will take quick moves and a redacted to foil the foul forces of redacted.
Okay, so I am in... God, it sounds like such a strange... I'm in a strange place. Where am I? Okay, my first guess is going to be maybe a little weird one, but I feel like fictionally it could work. Is this, oh my gosh, Double Fine game with Jack Black?
Brutal Legend?
Brutal Legend.
It is not Brutal Legend.
Could I get some metadata about this?
Yes, this has a 71 Metascore, but an 8.6 user score.
Oh.
So I would take that to mean that it kind of reviewed okay, but has an enduring legacy among a group of fans.
Okay, so give me the description one more time. I want to listen carefully.
A Wicked Plot by a Sinister Redacted and his massive redacted of monstrous redacted has cast Redacted into darkness. Only Redacted and his friends from the redacted world can bring the dawn again to the lands of the redacted elders. Get ready to discover a wild and unpredictable world where you'll use the surprising power of the giant redacted and the creatures they redacted to make your way through redacted realms and challenging missions. You'll be surprised by what you can do with those redacted, but it will take quick moves and a redacted to foil the foul forces of redacted.
Oh, man. Okay. All right, we have a bad guy. He's in a realm. There are potentially large creatures that I'm teaming up with. You know, if it weren't for the fact that you named a he as the protagonist, I actually am thinking, maybe just because I've got a launch Xbox this week, but I'm thinking about cameo elements of power with this, but I know that's not it.
Right. The he is a clue. I mean, it narrows it down somewhat to only 80% of video games.
That's right. Foil the Foul Plans?
It is Foil the Foul Forces.
Forces. Okay. Oh my gosh. It almost like I'm thinking large creatures, so that brings me to Shadow of the Colossus, but that's not it either.
Guy doesn't have a lot of friends.
Yeah. Okay, is this... Oh my god. Is this a Crash Bandicoot game?
No, but not a million miles off.
Okay. And I have friends. Okay. Could you give me a 0 and a 10 or another piece of info?
I will try, but I'll say on...
Or a 7.
On Metacritic, there are not any low user scores. The lowest one is a 7 that says good, redacted, fun. It's a nice little pun in there, but I can't read that word because it just gives too much away. But a 10 says... This is my favorite game of all time. The characters are adorable, but at the same time, awesomely cool. What other game could make a redacted suit look cute and cool? The game is incredibly fun. The controls are smooth, although you might need to get used to them at first. But when you do, oh man, the amount of fun you'll have. This one goes on for quite a while. Let me see if there's anything interesting in here. The redacted mechanics feel natural and it's very satisfying to kill enemies. The graphics are beautiful. Perhaps it doesn't hold up much today for the technical side, but in terms of style, it's wonderful. I think we really got to the heart of that one. We know what that person thinks.
So it's older. I'm a male protagonist. I have suits. This should tell me a lot about the game. There are realms with big bosses I'm fighting that become my friends, maybe, in some way.
I have more metadata here if you need it. You can feel free to have an extra guess as well if you want.
Give me one more metadata, and then I'll take a guess.
Okay, this is the number 52 best GameCube game of 2003, the number 26 most discussed GameCube game of 2003, and the number 14 most shared GameCube game of 2003.
Oh my gosh, 2003. I'm going to get this. Is this a Rayman game?
It's not a Rayman game.
Okay, I don't know what it is.
All right, I'll read the unredacted description.
Is this Sonic? It better not be Sonic.
It's closer to Sonic than it is to Rayman, okay. I will say.
All right.
A wicked plot by a sinister raven and his massive flock of monstrous crows has cast mourning land into darkness. Only Billy Hatcher and his friends from the human world can bring the dawn again to the land of the chicken elders. Get ready to discover a wild and unpredictable world where you'll use the surprising power of the giant eggs and the creatures they contain to make your way through puzzling realms and challenging missions. You'll be surprised by what you can do with these eggs, but it will take quick moves and a rooster suit to foil the foul forces of the Dark Raven.
The foul forces. How dare you? Oh my God. Oh, Billy Hatcher. And what is it? Billy Hatcher and the giant egg or something?
That's it. Yeah.
My God. I never played it, but I've seen videos of it.
I have not either, actually.
That's a good one.
Well, that's, another stumper this week, but we'll see how we do next week. Thanks again for listening, everyone. We'll catch you again next time.
Bye.